Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to answer your mailbag questions. As always, submit those in the future to lockedoncavs@gmail.com or on Twitter at lockedoncavs. And we'll talk a little bit about KPJ and the latest on him. So that's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, as we get started here today, just going to ask you a question. When we both get run out of town, where are you moving? Where is your locale you have in mind when you're no longer allowed in the city limits?
I have two destinations in mind. Since Justin Rowan's getting run out of Winnipeg, I guess I'll just move into his condo. He looks like he has a pretty nice place from the pictures I've seen of it. And plus, you know, living in a harsh frozen hellscape like Winnipeg in Canada, I think it's Ontario, but I'm going to be ignorant if I say that, but now I sound even more ignorant. But anyways, it's going to make me more positive and appreciate the little things like running water and constant electricity and Cleveland Cavaliers basketball. And if I don't go there, I can always go to Joe's house.
Oh, God. Joe who, Evan?
Joe Mama.
Well done. He told me he was going to do this, and he actually did it. It's really incredible stuff. If you're on Twitter and this all doesn't make sense to you, you're making good life choices, which I never do. So anyway, we'll get into questions today. Again, a lot of great ones. Evan, first thing here, though, Kevin Porter Jr. is in the NBA's concussion protocol. The Cavs announced that on Thursday in a press release. Basically, I'd have to look at the exact parameters on that, but you know, it makes him somewhat unlikely to play on Saturday at the very least. We'll know more on the official injury report tomorrow. But this is a tough blow. I mean, he kind of got hurt and disappeared, and then obviously got hit in the head playing against the Celtics on Wednesday. But that's exactly what you don't want from a guy that has been a lot of fun to watch grow this year.
Yeah, it definitely stinks because I think it was incidental contact when he collided with either Dean Wade or Ante Zizek going up for a rebound, and it's just an unfortunate situation overall. And quick shout out to Kevin on Twitter today. He said, because Bleacher Report posted the clip of him forgetting his jersey at the beginning of the game, and they're teasing him about it. And he says, "Thank you to the media for posting this and disregarding my head injury. Thank you for the disloyal fans/supporters. Thank you for the non-prayers with a sparkle emoji. I love the hate. That's what keeps me going. Sorry for who lost money in fantasy, didn't plan on getting hit in the head. Hashtag Scoot back soon." First off, love the nickname Scoot. Just KPJ rolls off the tongue better, and I don't feel as weird saying Scoot. I just feel weird calling a grown man Scoot. That's what I'm trying to get at here. But yeah, no, just it's going to be a tough blow for sure. And I hope he comes back stronger than ever. Last time he came back from an injury, he showed rust for one half, and that was he was out for a pretty long time with his last injury. So, yeah, no, I think he'll be fine. And just in typical Cavs fashion, I'm sure they're going to be overtly cautious with him and just make sure that he's totally taken care of before he gets back out on the floor.
Yeah, I think that is very clearly the move. I think it's the correct move. I don't think there's any other move I would really make if I was the Cavs. You know, I think you want to be really cautious. You know, it's a bummer not to have Matt there. You know, the injury situation with Alphonso McKinney and everyone, like, certainly leaves you a little thin on the wing. But, like, maybe you see NBA minutes from Sir Dominic Poynter. If KPJ, you know, can't play this weekend and, you know, is held out precautionarily, and obviously brain injuries are no joke. And then if McKinney's not ready to go, then maybe we see Sir Dominic Poynter. Maybe you see Matt Mooney. They do have one open roster spot, so they could go sign someone else to a 10-day deal. Like, they have some stuff they could do if they want to kind of go get another wing just to kind of fill minutes. To me, that would be preferable than to playing like six guys or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, we still don't know. Like, you know, that could lead to like Larry Nance at the three more if Drummond's healthy. Like, if Tristan's back, like, there's just a lot of weird injury stuff that's kind of clouding a lot of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables for sure.
yeah, probably quite a bit. Probably too many variables, frankly, at this point.
Hey, okay. But the good thing is KP was good enough to play some Fortnite with Dylan Windler. And shout out to the Cavs, other Cavs rookie who we haven't gotten to see this year. He's pretty good at the game. If he has a lot of career options, if basketball doesn't work out with professional golf, and he could be a pro Fortnite player if he wants to. Just my two cents.
Yeah, and apparently he's a John Wick fan, and that Colin Sexton doesn't like video games, which is, I think, checks out.
Yeah, no, it's
from everything, from every conversation I've ever had. I've had two one-on-ones with Colin Sexton, and both of them, I like asked him about movies and stuff, and it was like, he's just like, yeah, yeah. He was like, I really like The Equalizer, and then he's like, I'm like, when did you say? He's like, I don't know, I don't really go to movies enough. I'm like, okay, that's fair. You do what you gotta do. Okay, so. We're going to get into your questions here. Evan, you pick the first one. We'll get one in this first segment here because we've talked about some other stuff. But give me your first kind of question that you want to kind of tackle on this podcast.
Let's actually start from the top and keep it on the subject of Kevin Porter. At TrevBow3 asks, don't know if you've talked about this yet, but KPJ's height is all the talk right now. You think his potential growth spurt could solve our huge role at, in parentheses, starting small forward? If so, could it open up drafting a guard, in parentheses, LaMelo, question mark, and more for skill than need? Chris, what do you think? Do you think, how tall, let's start, there's a few questions in here. How tall do you think Kevin Porter is? Let's make our stance.
Well, Tristan Thompson said he was 6'7".
Yeah, well, Tristan Thompson also said he is taller than he actually is, too. So, and Tristan Thompson's not the most trustworthy guy when it comes to the truth.
Club. Yeah. I'm going to say that he's like 6'4", 6'5". I think that's about that's where I would have him. And then when I think about his role, I think he probably projects more as a 2. I think if he added muscle and like kind of got a little thicker and just kind of like, I think I want to see how much he weighs, how much he's listed at, but I don't think he's like I think he's wiry strong. And I think we've seen him actually hold up okay in certain instances this year, but I don't think he's only, according to his, he's 216 pounds, which is bigger than I would have thought.
Yeah. Which he could play. I think he more so plays the 2, but he can play 3 in certain lineup situations.
Yeah, I think if he got a little stronger, it's easier to defend 3s, but it depends on the 3 as well. But like by comparison, he's listed as the same weight, about like within a pound of Jetty Osman. And that's obviously going to fluctuate during the season, and maybe that's not as updated as often, but like that's about where you would think they're going to be. So... yeah, I don't think that's an unrealistic thing for him to play some 3. I think for me, though, I would want them to find, if I was Kobe Altman, I would probably be trying to find like a more permanent 3-4 option. I think you want a guy that instead of being like a 2-3 hybrid, I think the thing they're missing is a guy that can play the 3 and the 4, that can slide down to the 4 if you want to go small, that can guard bigger 3s. Like KP, I think the best version of KPJ defensively is probably a guy who's like defending some 2s and defending like lead guard type sometimes. I think you could have him on 3s, but I think when you think about like if he's like ends up becoming, let's say he maxes out his defensive potential, I think even then you look at someone like Giannis, like I have no idea how he can physically match that, and that's where I think you need a bigger, bulkier kind of wing type to go out there and find one. Even if it's like a veteran 1-year stopgap next year, I think I'd be trying to find that. I don't know if that guy exists in the draft. It could be like Isaac Okoro, depending on the draft, but it's like not Denny's, our guy Denny's game. That's not really Anthony Edwards' game. I think in some way that's something that would probably be at the top of my wish list when I think about next season, is just finding a 3-4 type veteran or just bigger wing that you can use on bigger wings than the other team.
Yeah, when he said 3-4, I thought of Isaac Okoro right away, but I do think Trevor, I think his question also is interesting as well. It's like, I don't know, I think I've been slowly talking myself into the prospect of if LaMelo Ball is there, Cleveland could draft him, and then he does have the size to play as more of a point forward than a traditional point guard, and I think that might mesh pretty well with what Cleveland is kind of constructing right now. I mean, they've drafted two undersized point guards to put in their backcourt. Why don't you put a bigger guard at the 3 and just get really weird with it? But at the same time, like, there are some glaring red flags with LaMelo, but it could be worse. If Cleveland drafts LaMelo Ball and tries to put him into the 3, and hopefully his daddy issues don't really flare up in Cleveland. I don't know. But yeah, no, when he talked about a 3-4, I think Isaac Okoro is definitely a good fit. But yeah, no, I don't think Denny could slide up to the 4. It's kind of like when Larry Drew was playing Jetty at the 4 at times last year. It just kind of felt like a disservice to his development. And I don't really want to go through that again with a wing who is out of place and out of position and just kind of stunting their development.
Yeah, that, I think that's right. Okay, let's take one other question here in this first segment. We're going to save the Colin Sexton question for next. Well, one of the two Colin Sexton questions. Maybe we'll just do both of those in there. We had someone just kind of ask broadly, I can't quite find the tweet right now, so I apologize, but asked us to talk about free agency and kind of the stuff there. And we'll get to that big thing and get to that as a big preview once we get closer to that. But Evan, when you think about free agency now, just as kind of an aside to this, are you in the camp of like, you would want to see the Cavs still try to be active, or are you in the camp of July is going to be a kind of a slow time for this? Do you have just sort of a take on sort of where the Cavs could be in sort of that sort of area as of right now where we look at everything?
Well, it depends. But based on what we've heard, it seems like Andre Drummond's likely to accept his player option and will be with Cleveland through next year. He could always get moved to the trade deadline or something as an expiring contract, but we'll see what happens on that front. So I think if Drummond does opt into his player option, that virtually just plays him out of free agency to begin with, and it's not much of a conversation. But if he does opt out, I think I'm more comfortable with Cleveland just kind of sitting on that cap space, maybe using it to take on bad contracts, to acquire draft picks and assets to help speed along this rebuild, because you don't want to plateau as an eighth seed for maybe the next 2 to 3 possibly next seasons, and then just put yourself in the same exact situation you're in right now. Why don't you just do this the right way the first time, so you don't have to repeat pay for your sins and errors. That's, I'm gonna get real dramatic here. Instead of in a couple years time, when you could just do this right the first time and actually have sustainable success. That's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I think I've always just kind of been in that camp, but Drummond is the X factor on what Cleveland can or cannot do in free agency this summer.
Yeah, it's all about Andre Drummond. Whatever he decides to do, he's going to shape the summer. He was kind of your big free agency move. And I don't think there's anything other than that that's really going to happen. It's not a great free agency class either, and we'll see what the Cavs maybe are thinking for 2021 or whatever. But again, it's going to largely, that is all going to start with Andre Drummond, what he decides to do, and how the Cavs kind of approach that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about more on this episode of Locked On Cavs. All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Okay, so we got two questions that are related to Colin Sexton. I think old Evan will just spend this segment talking about this. So first, the first question in this group comes from at TFNMMP, the F and M&M Podcast Network. Okay. Is the Sexton stretch a mirage, or do you guys think it's sustainable? And if it's sustainable, do you have to keep starting him? No. And then the kind of companion question comes from Billy BB. Billy 771 from Medina, Ohio. Shout out to Medina County. He said, lover of Sexton's scoring ability. The question of this year was defense and assists. Does it seem he's improved those? Does it matter? Let's attack these in companion. But Evan, what do you think? What's your take here?
I want to believe Colin's scoring output. I mean, maybe not to the extreme that he has been, like the 40-point game. He's had two career nights back-to-back. I don't think that's obviously going to be sustainable, so he's not going to be sniffing 50 against Denver or something like that and then trying to go for the all-time scoring record in a few weeks or something. But I do think like Colin is consistently – I mean, he's Cleveland's leading scorer. He has been for the entire year. And I'm going to give myself a little quick pat on the back real quick because I made that prediction in the Forbes preview that Sexton would be the team's leading scorer. So shout-out to Pat Sevens, if I'm sure correctly. But – no, I think, I don't know if like maybe this, that extreme an output is sustainable, but yeah, I could see him scoring at this clip in efficiency just because I think the coaching change really has helped him a lot. And you and I touched on this yesterday where JB is running a more pick and roll heavy offense, and that slows down the game for a young guard that kind of struggles with vision and playmaking. And that kind of coincides with the other question where, yeah, Sexton's starting to move the ball a lot better. And last night against Boston was one of the best games you and I have seen with with his vision overall, and hopefully that's sustainable as well, but we'll see. And then just to wrap up the other thing, like, defense is a little murky because Colin's been defending twos for predominantly through the season. So I pulled these numbers up for a piece I wrote for Forbes that says his defensive win shares are now up from negative 0.5 wins last season to 0.2 wins now, which obviously is at a huge jump. And then his defensive box plus minus improved by 1.2 points from negative 3.3 points per possession or per 100 possessions to negative 2.1 points per 100 possessions. That and his steal and block percentage has slightly increased. So yeah, he has shown some progress on defense, but you do have to like kind of keep look at this as the full spectrum here, where he's been defending twos and guards that are much bigger than him, and he's stepped up to the task. So I don't know if he's going to be like a world beater on defense, but he's starting to show a little bit of competency, and more so he's just a pest. And I think at this point in this crossroads in his career, like, that's more than what I could ask for, especially compared to last year when he graded out as the worst defensive player in the league. So any type of progress is progress on that front. So I guess just to summarize, like, I don't know if the scoring like too extreme is sustainable, but I think he's going to be leading Cleveland scoring down the stretch. And I think JB's offensive system versus Bayline's offensive system has done him a lot of wonders in these last few games.
Yeah, I think that's right. When I think about his scoring, I think the level he's gotten to, and we'll run through his numbers, I think it's pretty close. I think that December, I think that where he was 11 point, we talk about this a lot, but the fact that he was like 11% in three pointers, I want, that feels like an anomaly. For the year, 20.5 points, shooting 46.7% from the field. That's up a good, you know, 3.7% from last year, shooting 38% on threes right now. He's taking a full free throw more per game, per 100 possessions. And this is something I wrote about this week. He's a full 1.2 more free throws per 100 possessions, which is a decent, it's not like it's in between like where he was last year and then like getting up to like De'Aaron Fox level of drawing fouls. His free throw shooting is a little better than it was last year. He's overall become more efficient. And I think the passing and defensive, I think we've seen him make better reads of late. His assist numbers right now, if you look at him, he's averaging less assists per game, more per a little less than per 36 minutes, a little less per 100 possessions. His assist percentage is a little bit down on a little higher usage. So like that, I think the vision has improved, just the raw assist numbers haven't come up. That's something he kind of, when he talked to Chris Fedor during the week, that's something he indicated he thought of, that was the case. I think I'm higher on his defense than a lot are. I think you look at DRPM, I think he went from being I think just no matter what, if you think he's good, bad, whatever, the fact that he went from a bottom like three defensive player in the league, or at the very least one of the three worst defensive point guards in the league last year, up to like not a complete disaster, is a marked improvement. I know he cares about defense. I know that's something he values. I know that's something that he invests time in. So I think it's something the Cavs are hoping he can obviously take a big step forward on. I think it's something that will come in time. Defense is just the hardest thing to learn in the NBA. You know, it's not necessarily like this in the regular season, but if you get to the playoffs, and I'm stealing this from an Arnovitz and Lopod, but it's like every possession is like a fire drill, and, you know, it takes time to be thrown that way, to run into the deep end and figure that stuff out. So I think he's definitely improved. You wrote about this at Forbes. I think the starting thing is, you know, I think it matters more if he's in your end of the five game. I don't think there's a reason. I will admit that I was wrong about like saying just start KPJ. I think at this point you start him the rest of the year. Maybe I just think you got to think about this for next year. At this point, and we'll get to that. Greg Schwartz has a question that he sent us. So we'll spend I think the whole last segment talking about. But and Greg, I texted Greg to book him, so that's on the record now. But for the future, not for today, but for the future, we're gonna get him on next week. Love Greg. When I think about like Sexton, I think what his role and his ceiling ultimately are kind of still to be determined a little bit. My best guess is that he can be like a contributor on a good team. I don't think he's like the lead engine of that team, but I think he's someone that can be like a really useful piece, especially if the defensive stuff improves. And you know, the one other thing about this is we don't know how he fits with Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
Bringing in Andre Drummond, who, if like he'd been, if he kept up his kind of play the way he's been the rest of the year, would be about the same usage, like above Sexton in usage rate, which is pretty crazy considering Sexton, I think, leads the team in usage rate other than like Malik Newman, who played like a few minutes. If he, how he coexists with someone who's going to soak up so many possessions like that is something we don't really know, because A, he didn't play last year with Kevin. B, Kevin does not eat up as many possessions on this iteration of the Cavs as you think he might, and so that's somewhat because of Sexton. How he fits with Drummond, who is just going to demand a certain amount of possessions and empowerment and stuff, will be something to watch. That to me, and the lineups were like, he's the point guard, and like the, and what, how the offense actually, like, even if he's getting his numbers, I want to see how the offense bears out in those moments where he's the point guard and he's leading the lineup and there's not like another guard on the floor. How does the team perform in those lineups? And it's been kind of not that productive this year, but there's obviously a lot of reasons to think that this isn't the group that's going to give you the best answer about that.
No, I agree. And I think it's a bit of a shame that we haven't really gotten a good taste or feel for really how Andre Drummond operates with this offense as a whole, where the first few games were just kind of up and down. And then that game against Indiana, like, he had a sans of three-pointers. He had a pretty solid overall night, and arguably the best night for the Cavaliers, even in a loss. But, yeah, no, that's just a bit of the frustration at this point. Is not, maybe not frustration, the right, yeah, frustration is the right word in this situation, where it's just like you want to see what this team can look like at full strength down the stretch, just to kind of figure out what the Cavs have going for them going forward, because we know Sexton will be here next year. We know Garland will be here next year. We know Osmond will be here next year. Kevin Love is a bit of a mystery, just depending on whether or not the Cavs are able to move him. And I would just think at this point that they are going to try their damnedest to trade Kevin. And then Andre Drummond, like you and I have touched on many times now, is likely to be back next year. So 4/5 of your starting lineup will probably be back next year. And so, barring like anything that happens in the draft, maybe like you move Garland or Sexton or Osmond to the bench and you bring up another person to the draft, or you just kind of shake things up, because JB Bickerstaff has flirted with the idea reportedly of starting KPJ, but just decided not to shake things up for the remainder of the year. But that's something to tackle next season. But yeah, no, I think that's just the other thing, is like, I would like to see what Cleveland has going forward heading into next season, because obviously they're not making the playoffs. So it's just now we're just kind of figuring out what they have. And I think Andre Drummond being sidelined with this nagging calf injury of his is just really obviously preventing that from happening.
Yeah. Just as a to kind of give you guys an indication of the sample size we're working with here on the Sexton, Drummond, and particularly Garland off the court lineups, per Cleaning the Glass, there have been only 28 possessions with that duo. Offensively, they're at 107.1 points per 100 possessions. That's in the bottom quarter of the league in terms of offensive rating. They're pretty good on defense, actually, at a 106.7 defensive rating. So that's pretty freaking good in that small sample size. The offense is bad. The defense has been good. That's sort of the opposite of what you want. And if you factor in the lineups towards Sexton, Garland, and Drummond, that bumps up to 211 possessions, and with 109 of those being Sexton, Garland, Osmond, Love, Drummond. The other version of that is Nansen for Love. On the aggregate, they're only scoring about 103 points per 100 possessions. Defensively, those lines with both of them on the floor are bad. The only thing that they're good at on the aggregate is their offensive rebounding rate, and that's really inflated by the Nance Drummond lineup. So the early numbers are not like the most encouraging thing in the world. I think that's way too early to tell, but I one of the reasons I think it'd be really good to see Drummond play is I think if you're going to go into next season and there's like a, and there you're thinking, okay, Drummond's going to be part of this, you need to see how he meshes with Sexton. I think just because Garland is, you know, throws lobs more often and that kind of stuff, like maybe you that figures out a little bit differently. It's just one of those things we just don't know enough yet. And I think that's probably one of the things with Sexton, is just like, he's on his fourth coach.
Yeah.
Which is not his fault. I could not believe I when I went and like looked up the story about the veteran saying he didn't know how to play, I could not believe that happened 10 games into the season.
Like, that's so long ago.
That is like, frankly, like that's piss poor from the veterans on that team. Like, that's ridiculous. That like, I'm sorry. Like, that is just the stupidest thing. The guy is, he's like 19 years old at that point. it is like, yes, like maybe Kobe Altman and them sold you like visions of trying to compete, but like you have a choice to either like complain about your teammates in through the media or like try to help someone figure it out. And like, I think like George Hill did this to some degree, as far as I know, but like, and JC, I think got better at it over time, but like, and JR was around then and that was just not working. But like Kevin, Tristan, who I think has taken out, became a leader last year, Channing, like those, and Deli when he came in, who I think has done a good job from everything I've heard. You should not be like throwing that guy under the bus 10 games into the season. That's just stupid. And I think if the Cavs were like kind of more kind of put in order last year, like maybe some of this doesn't happen, you know, like maybe some of the flack he gets just kind of, it's less, he just gets less gut like crap early on in his career that he frankly didn't really deserve.
No, I agree. And it's funny because maybe I'm being petty right now, but I know you said the same thing at the time, but like, yeah, looking back at that situation, I was just super frustrated saying like, yeah, he's 19 years old. And like, I get it. At, like you said, maybe the veterans who came back and it, whether it was Korver, Hill or JR or God, there's so many Rodney Hood and everybody else just who either came back or was just kind of promised by Kobe, like saying like, hey, we're going to try and compete for the playoffs and make this work even without LeBron. And that did kind of seem like a bit of a fantasy to begin with, but then Kevin Love getting injured derailed everything, and Colin Sexton didn't go out there and break Kevin Love's foot to intentionally tank the season, and then didn't force George Hill to get hurt so that he was thrusted into the starting lineup. And then when Ty Lue was fired because he stood up for you, they're stuck with you guys instead of trying to roll with Sexton and Jetty as kind of the featured pieces. But, you know, it's just semantics. And like you said, it's just piss poor reflection on the veterans who are present for this. And thankfully, a lot of the ones who have stuck around, like you said, Tristan more than any of them. And then, yeah, Deli as well. Deli's told me that he, his big thing is like just teaching Colin and Darius like things that LeBron and Giannis have taught him, because that's valuable experience to learn from the best player in the league and arguably one of the greatest players of all time. It's just like taking care of your body and just doing things the right way the first time, and like what to study, what to look for in film, and just like things you need to analyze and how you make the most out of practice. Like, that's all super valuable stuff to teach these guys, and maybe it's starting to pay off with Sexton. And like, I've had some people text me with like Larry Nance posting or tweeting a screenshot of his stats from ESPN, or Kevin Love talking about or tweeting that Colin is one of the hardest working players he's ever worked with. And like, this kind of feels like it's a little fake and ham-fisted. No, I think it's just genuine, because, and I do think it's admirable myself, that Sexton has gotten, was dogged hard by his teammates last year, and it took a while for them to come around on him. And then the NBA snubbed him for Rising Stars, and then he just kept on keeping on. And like we touched on in the first segment, Dylan Windler shared, like, he doesn't really know what Colin does in his spare time. It just kind of, and he's like, I think he just goes home and sits on his couch and waits till practice or the next game. Like, that's just Colin Sexton. I think he genuinely loves the game of basketball, and he's trying to be the best he can be. And yeah, he does have his flaws and he has his lumps, and there's sometimes like he's more frustrating than he is exciting, but I totally am okay with where he's at. And like you touched on, Chris, like I read that article too when that Varden report dropped. Like, first off, yeah, it's hard to believe that was only 10 games into the season, but that also feels like a lifetime from go from how much.
Oh yeah, it feels like
how much
5 years ago
to put us through.
Yeah, it's crazy. That just remains, just last season was not good for anyone. There's very little about last year that I think you could feel like particularly great about. So, all right. Come back, talk a little bit about more here, answer one more big question, and that'll be coming up next on Locked On Cavs. All right, we are back here on Locked On Cavs. Last question comes from a good friend of the program, Greg Schwartz. He asked us, what is, I gotta find the exact tweet here because I moved away from it. But he asked us if, what is your ideal starting lineup / rotation to start next season? Evan, go first.
Okay, so starting five will likely be, probably it's going to be Garland, Sexton, and I think it's going to be Porter, and then So there's multiple paths you can go here, but I'm just gonna stick on one and assume Kevin Love gets moved. So you bump Larry Nance up to the starting five, and then you put Andre Drummond in as well, just based on what we've heard. So that's your starting five, and then your bench rotation will probably be left here. Dante Exum coming off the bench, and then you'll have Dylan Windler coming off the bench. Depending on who Cleveland drafts, like either he gets thrust in the starting lineup or not, he'll be coming off the bench. They have Jetty as well. Like that's your 9-man rotation going into next season, and you can kind of mix and match and just kind of fine-tune things to figure out what works and what doesn't work, and maybe it'll be situational things, but that's what I kind of feel like it's going to be next year, and it's not going to be super exciting. We're going to probably see a lot of the same thing, hopefully just a lot more growth and progress, but it's going to be a pretty quiet off-season, I feel, for the Cavs, so other than the draft.
Yeah, so you basically have a 9-man rotation. The Kevin part of this is like really interesting because I think that's like the only one that's like, I think that and then to a lesser degree Drummond, because I just have a hard time. I just think functionally I cannot imagine like he is going to turn down like $28 million.
No, he won't get down to the market.
And I think he's probably like in actuality probably worth like less than that, even if he's maybe not like, you're not going to get him at a bargain contract like Jusuf Nurkic or something like that. So, but he's probably not worth $28 million. So I'm guessing he probably opts in, sees if he can get more money when there's more, just more options available. He'll have more leverage to hit the free agent in 2021. That makes to me Kevin Love the sort of the swing piece in this, because there is a world where you trade him and you, I think, are getting some kind of picks back ideally, but you're also probably, you need to get salary matching. And I think if you're salary matching, and this is where it gets tricky, you're probably wanting to get players that either A, are like going to sort of fill what he does, or B, are going to at least give you like kind of depth. I don't know. I think the latter is likely. I think if you're trading him, you're getting depth. So I'm going to say if Kevin ends up being moved, I'm saying you roll into next year. Let's just stick with Sexton and Garland. Let's just say Jetty at the three for right now. But that's sort of another thing where I think if you could upgrade it, you should try and do it and make him like kind of a bench piece. Maybe it's KPJ, you start him. But then let's go Nance and Drummond together up front. Let's roll with that. And then let's say you're going to have, that makes the core of your bench Kevin Porter Jr., Dylan Windler, who I think you absolutely should play. So that gets you to 7. Dante Exum is your kind of backup point guard, which I think I would just try and play 20, 25 minutes a game next year as long as he's healthy, which is obviously a big if. And then that leaves you, yeah, right. And then it leaves you at the back end there, kind of one to two spots. I'm going to say Dean Wade. Again, I don't think the Cavs are going to make like a ton of free agency stuff. I could be overestimating what Dean Wade is, but like if you look at like you have the two wings, you have sort of the various options out there for your stuff. If you want to have a third big and Kevin's not around, and depending on what you get from him certainly could impact this. Like that, and that's sort of one of the unknowable things here. Like if he does get moved and you get guys back, like that are going to start, like, yeah, like Dean Wade's not going to quite matter as much. But if you're looking at that, like maybe he's your third guy and you try to develop another young guy, and then obviously you have your rookie in there. So you're getting to 9-10 guys regardless. And that, like, when I'm looking at like the different options out there. Like, I don't know if there's like an obvious like free agency option to really think about in these instances to kind of fill whatever need you say you have.
I guess my question is, Drummond, yeah, well, Drummond first off is like a lynch piece because it either he opts in and it pulls Cleveland entirely out of free agency, just their cap is absorbed for the summer, or he opts out and that kind of gives the Cavs options and hopefully they don't burn their money. But you know, Kevin Love is the option as well. I'm like, that's the tough thing here because Cleveland already has so many people under contract to begin with. And let's say you flip Kevin for one or two contracts. I'm sure those are both going to be rotation pieces as well. And that just makes it even murkier. But like, yeah, I'd like to see them take a chance on Dean Wade. And then apparently Harry Giles isn't long for Sacramento. And if for some reason Cleveland is able to snag him up, like,
Carter Rodriguez.
Okay. Let's just, you know what?
I had to.
But our loss, or Sacramento's loss, is anyone else's game in most situations, and this is another one. So It could be worse. He's 21 years old. He could be solid at the center, who knows, but also could fail in spectacular fashion. But that was just kind of like what I'm getting at. But like, and I could see Dean Wade being an option as well, as just like that third power forward in a rotation, second or third power forward in a rotation, and you just keep developing him instead of like letting him cook in camp. Maybe you let him actually play like 12, 13 minutes a night and then gradually increase his input throughout the season next year. Like, yeah, I'm fine with that too. But just Cleveland has a lot of mouths to feed in next season. Like, right now they're guaranteed to add at least one rookie in this draft, and then you have to consider Dylan Windler a rookie next year as well, because he'll be technically is a rookie next year, and Cleveland thinks very highly of Windler and what he brings to the table, and barring anything unforeseen, as long as he makes a full recovery from his surgery, like, he's going to probably be expected to play in the rotation right away. And actually, he touched on that during his Fortnite stream. He had no comment on practice being overworked and practice being the reason why he's suffered from leg injuries. But
wait, so was like KPJ like interviewing him, or is he just talking, or are people asking things?
People were like, he actually has like a legitimate, like a professional stream set up. Like, when I pulled it out, I was like, oh shit, it's just not like some guy talking like with game footage. No, he has like himself like in the upper left hand corner, like with a full mic set up and like a headset. He's like talking into it, and he's like talking to people in chat, and people are like just peppering him with questions every now and then. Like, when I tuned out, he was talking about like what a normal day for him is. Like, oh yeah, we know we go to practice, and then we usually get treatment, then we go home and just relax until there's a game that night. And he's like, if you play, he's like, I obviously haven't played much, but he's like, you warm up and get ready for shoot around, or you just kind of go there and just make sure everything's right and functioning. But no, he touched on the fact that if he's healthy, he would like to play in summer league again. And so I think the expectation is, at least for on Windler's behalf, and I'm going to assume the organization's as well, like, he'll be a part of the rotation next year. And I think he will be kind of an interesting piece, because I think he'll unlock a lot of both Cleveland's bench unit and possibly even like playing with the starters as well in certain rotation situations as well. Like, he would have been a huge X factor this year as well. But no, it's going to be a little murky until Cleveland kind of figures out what they're doing with Kevin Love and what Andre Drummond is doing with Cleveland. And then once you kind of have those two pieces figured out, you kind of, the rest of the roster just kind of, and the rotation just fills itself out at that point.
Exum's probably the first guy that gets dropped from that, I would guess.
Yeah, I would too, which is kind of a bummer, but
especially if like you go out and let's say you sign, like, if you're looking at like potentially veteran wings that are available, and you wanted to just like upgrade your starting small forward spot, move Jetty to the bench sort of thing. Kent Bazemore is out there. Evan Turner, who I wouldn't really prioritize, would be out there. Courtney Lee is a bit older, but would sort of be out there. Solomon Hill will be out there. Jay Crowder will be out there. Mo Harkless. You know, like you're not going to have as many guys at that certain point. And like, you know, I don't think like Joe Harris is going to be option. Like, I don't, you know, the Ingram thing is probably not there.
DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, no, I'm good. you know, that was
whispering
that,
it.
Yeah, well, that's just the kind of instances you're getting into. And like Evan Fournier might be out there. We'll see what happens with him. He's sort of more of a two than a three. So like
Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, I mean,
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I don't know.
I mean, those are guys I thought the Cavs should go after this year, but I would rather at this point, like, I would rather see, I would probably just because of the money, like, Exum and then your rookie, which I would probably just give those guys minutes. I think I would, Exum, like, has just something I just like, and I would see how people work with it.
He cannot score, but he plays defense competently, and he's a solid enough defender that, I know you and I talked about it for a while, that while he was healthy and just kind of like looking like he was establishing a certain rapport and comfort level with this team, like if the Cavs wanted to pull the plug on one of their young point guards and plug Exum into next to them, like that makes sense on paper at least. And I don't know, maybe Exum will have interested suitors on the market this summer because he won't score much for you, maybe 6 to 7 to 8 points with an occasional outburst like he has had with Cleveland, but he plays defense well and he moves the ball well and he's just a smart, cerebral player. Like, I like what he brings to the table and what he presents, but yeah. I agree at the same time, like, if you're trying to focus on player development, a guy who is not reliably available because of his health is pretty easy to cut out of the rotation at that point.
If you were going to drop one starter this year from the starting lineup to the bench, who is it?
Well,
I think for me, it's Jetty right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I do too, because Jetty's got peaks and valleys, and right now he's in one of his valleys again, where he's just kind of struggling. And I think you and I both have always been in that camp where having Jetty and Larry Nance and, God forbid, I mean, I don't know anymore because I'm not going to put a ceiling on him, but if Colin Sexton was coming off the bench, if you had those three as key pieces in your bench rotation, like, that's a lot of energy coming off your bench. And, like, you get a formidable bench unit doing that. But if I had to pick one person in the starting five, yeah, I'd pick Jetty, because I think long-term his skill set would be more properly utilized off the bench, more so than Sexton at this juncture.
Yeah. I think Sexton could be that as well, but it just, some of these things, like, depends on your rotation, depends on what your roster plan is, like, you know, depends on what, like, what kind of Garland looks like, you know, like, I think, like, one of the things that we, it's like, so we, I, how, I'm going to promise the listeners this, next week, you and I are going to have a Darius Garland discussion. Okay. We have not had one this year. I've not written about him nearly enough. I feel like I don't have, like, a good read on him at all, just because, like, he's just sort of out of the picture a lot. He's currently injured. Obviously he's an enigma, and we'll break it down him down next week. But, like, I would expect next year is kind of like his big, bounce up, big bounce year. If he has, like, kind of a leap, it's just because he has a full year under this year, gets to work out all summer, and then come into next year kind of with more momentum than he did this year. So, like, that's probably the ideal path.
Yeah.
But again, I think if you do something like, you swap in KPJ as the starting three for Jetty, and Jetty, and, or, like, do something where XM star, I don't know, but I think, like, you could have little tweaks here and there, but we'll see how those things go. Any final thoughts, Evan, as we get out of here? Any, as we're getting into the weekend, which game are you most looking forward to? Spurs game, Nuggets game?
Depends on who's available. I'm going to say I'd rather watch the Spurs game, because maybe that's a little bit more winnable, and it gives James Rapine some ammunition to harass us if we're both at the game when DeMar DeRozan's in town. So that's what I'll go
with. Well, he's not on the DeRozan train. He's on the no Google train.
Yeah, no, I know. But, like, he's the one who put that fear in the back of my head, and it just won't go away. And, like, I can just picture James listening to this at work tomorrow and just chuckling to himself evilly, thinking about how, like, he's put the fear of God in me that the Cavs are going to screw the pooch somehow in free agency this summer.
Yeah, fair. I would just say the Nuggets game, because I just think, A, that team's more interesting, and B, I just, if the Cavs are, we'll kind of get an idea of where their health is at for Saturday, and kind of see what their plans are going to be to navigate some of this. But that's going to be it for today's show. Have everyone a good weekend. Everyone, we'll figure out what our plan is for these weekend games in the coming days. But at the very least, you'll hear from us again on Monday, if not sooner. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs, at least while we're still in Cleveland. Talk to you soon.